Hi, I'm James Arnold. I'm the Global Co-Head of Strategic Insights and Advisory in Global Banking at UBS. The purpose of these podcasts is to shine a light on the global banking business. And to do that, I'm talking to a wide range of the CD leadership. Today, I'm joined by Gaetano Bosolino, who is the Head of Global Banking in APAC, based in Hong Kong. Gaetano, many thanks for joining us. On previous podcasts, we've heard about the development of global banking in both Europe and the US. Could you do the same for us here and introduce the franchise in Asia, particularly what has changed post the deal with Credit Suisse?
Thank you, James, for the introduction, and great to be here today. The franchise in the Asia-Pacific region has indeed changed and accelerated in terms of presence and strategy on the back of the Credit Suisse integration. We currently present in 13 countries. We have roughly 500 bankers across the various locations. In terms of addition on the back of the CS integration, we have welcomed around an incremental 110 bankers. So prior to the integration, the number would have been slightly below 400. So roughly an increase of 25%. The increase is in a similar line in terms of new MDs, which is also around 25% or 16 new MDs for a total of around 80 MDs. Both UBS and Credit Suisse have enjoyed a very strong presence in the Asia-Pacific region. And fortunately for us, there is a high degree of complementarity. UBS have been historically very much focused around China and Australia, where we had a large presence and enjoy a very high market share, particularly in ANZ, while Credit Suisse has been more focused historically around Southeast Asia, India, and Korea. So a high degree of complementarity given our footprint and their footprint. So with integration, we've been able to capture areas that historically we were underweight. As mentioned, Korea, Southeast Asia, and India, those are all parts that have moved over. And if we look from a sector and content point of view, Credit Suisse has enjoyed historically a stronger focus in TMT, also thanks to their US presence, and also in the industrial space, particularly in energy transition. And those are also teams they've moved over. I'll pause here.
Thanks very much. It's great to hear about the scale of the business and the complementarity of putting the two together. But as we both know, banking is highly competitive. Could you touch on the areas of differentiation or competitive advantage that you see for your business in the region?
Yes, of course. Indeed, Asia is not short of competition. We have most of the global players and a large scale of domestic players in most of the countries that we operate. If we think about our differentiation in the region, I would be thinking particularly at the uniqueness of our local footprint. We have very entrenched local teams on the ground. So the strengths, I would call it, is on the local teams. And that touches not just on the banking footprint, but also on wealth management, how those businesses work well, and the so-called one bank model, I think, works particularly well in the Asia region, has been called as an example. And this is also linked, particularly in Asia, less so in Australia and Japan, for reasons more related to the economic cycle. There are a lot of synergies between wealth management clients, ultimately on businesses, and the corporate that is active in the market. And therefore, that's where global banking comes into play. So in essence, I would say the unique combination of local presence with global content and product affiliation, with multiple touch points at the group level, given that we enjoy a strong presence across all divisions of the firm in all the countries they operate, I think makes us quite unique. Asia for us is probably our second home market, I would call it, after Switzerland and perhaps in many countries even stronger than countries that we operate in Europe. And I'm talking about in terms of market share, not just for banking, but I would say across the group.
Yes, that scale of wealth management franchise I hear in a lot of meetings I attend with clients, and it's truly truly impressive. Perhaps we could turn to markets and economies for a second. I mean, certainly from here in London, but I'm pretty sure across your region, for obvious reasons, the Chinese economy is a subject of much debate, or the state of the Chinese economy is a subject of much debate. Could you talk a little bit about your views on where we are in that cycle and perhaps the impacts on your business?
Thanks, James, for the question. China is indeed a very important part of our business. As I was saying before, and that's probably a reference to the uniqueness of the model and the strengths of the local presence, it's a calling card for us globally. If I move for a second away from banking, but I know for a fact the markets, China has been one of the biggest calling cards in terms of serving global clients that are interested in China and using UBS for accessing the China market. The same is true for banking, I would say, given the geopolitics and some of the headwinds that that business has been facing, that has been less pronounced. While from a market point of view, the activity, given it is a two-way, has been probably less impacted. If we look from an outlook point of view, I mean, China is going through a transition and adjustment phase. Capital market is probably the part of the business you're seeing the biggest slowdown in terms of volume and activity. There is also a shift in terms of consumer behaviors and policy. There is a downgrading from a consumer point of view. There is a lot more focus on what many would call China for China, and so on domestic consumption, domestic production, and growing the domestic market as opposed to focusing more on exporting and therefore the offshoring side of the business, which has translated in terms of volumes and activity is slowed down vis-a-vis what we have seen. Having said that, I think China has been at the forefront in many areas, in particular from a technology point of view. I can think about the EV space and the entire ecosystem around it, where if anyone happens to go to China, you will note a very high percentage of green plate on cars. So that's a way to distinguish from the more traditional cars. And we have seen the rapid growth and expansion of that segment, which has been becoming also relevant offshore. And so this all to say, I think China is finding a new norm, a new balance, which is ultimately very much linked to the policy of common prosperity that was launched in 2021. And post-COVID, a country that has been closed for longer than others, I think is gradually reopening it. It virtually reopened in December 2022. So there are still, I would say, upside from a normalization post-COVID, as well as some of the transformation they're embarking from technology point of view. And geopolitics will continue to play a role. So the way we should be looking at China is probably more, I would say, towards Europe and Southeast Asia, as opposed to the US, which was very much part of the business, I would say, before COVID. And we very much believe that it will remain a very important part of our business and will very much continue to be used a calling card for us, as virtually every large business globally has a presence in China, and how they will manage their China exposure. Some will increase, some will decrease, will be very much something that we can be helpful from here on the ground, and helping understanding how the country is going to evolve.
I think just to finish up, we've talked on European and US focused podcasts about what appears to be sort of some early signs of opening up of the IPO market and a bit more activity around M&A. Could you just stick Asia into that framework, and what do you see in terms of a potential or actual recovery in terms of market activity? And I guess as a final point, is it right to think of Asia as a whole, or should we be thinking about individual discrete countries rather than a whole geography?
Very good question. Let me start with the last part of your question. I think Asia very much is a mosaic. It's very diverse, exciting, and different set of countries. What Australia does and Japan couldn't be more different from some of the more continental Asia. And you have a combination of countries in the very developed phase, like Australia and Japan. And then you have a set of countries that go from emerging market to frontier markets. They enjoy different cycles. So one of the beauty of it, it's very rare that you have an homogeneous picture of the Asia Pacific region in terms of economic cycle. And so what might work at a given time in one part of the region might be very different from other parts. So if we think about capital markets and if we think about IPO, at the moment, I would say the pocket of the region that continue to be very well supported by global investors, and we're seeing a relatively healthy activity from convertibles, blocks, and IPOs. I would say is very much around India and Japan. Those two countries have taken the lion's share of activity year to date, and they were also very active last year. Followed by Korea, Taiwan, and very selectively pockets of Southeast Asia. So, for a global investor's point of view, people that have been playing growth have been looking at India. People that have been playing, I would say, scale and liquidity have been looking particularly at Japan. Geopolitics has also plays a role. Those are also countries that have, I would say, more adjacencies and more alignment with US. And Korea and Taiwan as well, they also benefit in terms of focus around the semiconductor space together with Japan. We are now going to be launching a Korea IPO. That will be a first for us. And there's been, as mentioned, a number of activity both in Japan and in India. Unfortunately, given our position in those countries, we've been not as active, but we've been addressing that. We made, for instance, an IR in Japan in ACM Senior that will be joining in June. The team from Credit Suisse, which has a strong track record in India, we just got our license back on April 1st. And so we're going to regain that market and hopefully be part of what has been a very busy pipeline in India. So quite exciting with the addition of our new colleagues and the complementarity they bring to the table. And the deeper reach that we have across the entire Asia Pacific region, which has been incredibly additive and exciting, we will be able to capture the positive wave that we're seeing coming from US and Europe when it comes to IPO capital markets, and confident that the rest of the region is going to find this footing, and more will come in some of the more traditional markets like China and Australia from the second half onwards.
Thanks very much, Gaetano. Perhaps we'll finish on that somewhat positive note as we look forward to recovery in the second half. I mean, thank you for your insights into the region, and it is definitely way more complex than I think some of the very simple broad brush conclusions we come to outside of it are. So really appreciate your time, and we'll get you back on the podcast later this year to talk about that market pickup.
Thank you so much, James. Very happy to be here, and looking forward for the next conversation.